The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
The Sexual Revolution, a Torah viewpoint. We are living through a time, presently, when we've seen a great deterioration of sexual morals throughout much of the world in general, and this has seeped in even into the Jewish ranks. This subject, in general, the sexual nature of man, is a very mysterious subject, a subject of which so much has been written about and so much has been said about. In our generation and in preceding generations, yet it still remains one of the great mysteries to men after all that was said and written. In our Torah HaKadosha, there is a wealth of Torah guidance and instruction in regards to this subject. And the points of these shurim, this week and next week, is to delve into just a small, minute portion. Because we certainly could not even attempt to study in these small times allotted much more than that. Someone asked me if there would be enough material for two shurim. And this is a subject that we could give 1,000 shurim on, just drawing from the wellsprings of the Torah. But to delve into a minute portion of this and take from there guidance and instruction how man should confront this great area, and then reflect upon the sexual revolution that is taking place during our times. We will examine the Torah viewpoint from two angles. One from the legal structure, and secondly from the moral structure. And some of the particular areas which we hope to cover, please God, will be the structure of marriage, how it relates to the all of the peoples of the world, how it related to the Bnei Yisrael before the Torah was given, and the Kedusha Yisrael, the extra dimension of sanctity that was given to the Bnei Yisrael after the Torah was given. The area of the essence and the sanctity of the sexual relations in regards to Israel under the structure of marriage. The Pelegish, which means that a woman who lives with a man as man and wife in a constant situation but without a proper marriage. Dias Penuya, which means physical relations, intercourse with someone outside of the structure of marriage. The Kedesho, which is what the Torah refers to as prostitution. Chayvei Lavin, those that the Torah have forbade us to take for wives was a negative commandment. Yes, akum. Relationships between the Jew and the non-Jew in this area. Eishes ish, adultery. Arayas machmas kurva, incest. And Masi Eretz Mitzrayim, deviations from the norm. We will start from the first subjects mentioned and follow in that order. In Bereishis, Beis Yud Ches, the Torah tells us, "Vayemer Hashem Elokim le'Tov heyoso Adam levadei, Asher le'Ezer kenegdei." Hashem said that it is not good for a person to be alone. I will make for him an Ezer kenegdei, a helpmate, which will be with him, or opposite him. Vayapel Hashem Elokim Tadema ala Adam vayishon. And Hashem brought a heavy sleep over man. Vayikach achas mitzaleison vayizgor bose tachteno. And he took one of his ribs and he closed the flesh from beneath it. Vayiven Hashem Elokim es hatzelo asher lokach min Adam leisho. Vayivieho el Adam. And Hashem built from this side, from the rib which he took from man, a woman, and he brought her to man. And man said, Zeisapam, this time etzem me'atzomai, a bone which is from my bones, uvoser mipsori, and flesh which is from my flesh, lezeisi kore isho, she shall be called woman, ki me'ish lukocha zos, because she was taken from man. Al kein yazov ish es ovi ves imai, and therefore man shall forsake his father and mother, v'dovak bi ishtai, and he shall cleave to his wife, v'hoyu levoser echod, and they shall be made into one flesh. They shall become one flesh. And then the Torah tells us, actually slightly before this, and this is in Bereishis Aleph Posuk Chof Ches, by Vorech Hashem Elokim, when Hashem created man and woman, so he blessed them, Vayem Elohim Elokim, and he said to them, Pru Urvu Umilu Eso Oretz, be fruitful and multiply, and fill up the land, Bikiv Shuha, and conquer it. Uridu Bidgas Hayom V'Eif Hashomayim V'Vachol Chayo Ha'Rameses Halo Oretz, and rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the heaven and over all of the wildlife of the land. This is our first source in the Torah where we see the zivug, the marriage, that the woman was created for man and he was brought to man, and the Torah told him, V'dovak bi'ishtai, you shall cleave to your wife, and pru urvu, and be fruitful and multiply. The Rambam brings at the beginning of Hilchos Ishus, before the Torah was given, a man would meet a woman in the marketplace, if he was interested and she was interested to be married, then he would take her to his house, Ubalo, he would have sexual relations with her, Beinai Levein Atzmai, privately, where there were no witnesses, Vitielol Isha, and she would become his wife. This was the structure of marriage, of how one became legally married before the Torah was given for Bnei Yisrael, for Jews, and for Bnei Noach, for the children of Noach. The Rambam brings further in Hilchos Melachim Perek Tes, Halacha Hey, that the non-Jew was given 7 mitzvahs. Not like the Jew that was given Taryag 613. One of those 7 mitzvahs was Arayis, which means he had a code of a moral standard. Amongst the, he was not forbidden in all of the Arayis, you know, the same degree of morals that the Jew was forbidden in. But in one of those that he was commanded in was Eishes Ish. He's not allowed to take another man's wife. How do we know this? So this the Rambam brings from the Gemara in Sanhedrin. V'davak b'ishtoi, that it states that he shall cleave to his wife. We read that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Adam, V'davak b'ishtoi, you shall cleave to your wife. From here it says his wife. He shall cleave to his wife, v'lei b'eishes chaveiro, and not in the wife of your fellow man. This is the Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin Daf Nun Ches. So we see that there's the structure of issues, the structure of the legal structure of marriage by the non-Jew. What is determined his wife, and what is to be determined the wife of his fellow man. Now, like we quoted Kodem Matan Torah, before the Torah was given, what constituted issues marriage? If he was willing and she was willing, and he set her aside for him, she became yuchedesh, she became set aside for him, and there was sexual relationships with this knowledge, then legally she became his wife. If another man would take that woman, then he would transgress a very serious commandment in the Torah. We're speaking in regards to non-Jews or Bnei Yisrael Jews before the giving of the Torah, and it carried capital punishment, taking another man's wife. Ein ben Noach chayev al eishes chaveiro ad sheyavo aleho kedarka acha sheniva lo labayro. But this prohibition of taking another man's wife, this was only if this woman had a sexual relationship with her husband. But what would happen if a man would take a woman and they would go through a marriage ceremony? They would go through a marriage ceremony which might be a betrothal, or they would make a chuppah, or they would go to the courts for a marriage license, or they would go to a minister or a justice of peace or some other type of official to make them into man and wife, this is not considered a marriage in the eyes of the Torah. And therefore, if that woman would be taken by another man, it would not be a transgression. The only thing that constituted marriage was sexual relationships. And with the consideration that through this she should be his permanent wife. We're not speaking of something which is just of an occasional nature. How do we know this? So this we have a source in the Torah for. In Parshas Lech Lecha, Tes Zayin Gimel. Now, excuse me. It's in Parshas Vayiro, Perechov Posu Gimel. When Avraham went down to the land of the Plishtim, to Avimelech, Vayem Avraham el Sora Ishtei Achesihi. And he said to Sarah, his wife, that she is my sister, because he was afraid that if he would tell them that she's my wife, then they would kill him and take her. Vayishlach Avimelech melech Gror vayikach es Sarah. And Avimelech sent to Gror, and he saw Sarah, and he took her. Vayove elekim el Avimelech b'chalom alaylo. And God came to Avimelech in a dream at night, vayem elei, you will die for the woman that you have taken, because he bu'ulas bo'al, because she is the wife of another man. But when the Torah here describes to us, what does it mean she's a wife to another man? This means that she had sexual relations with this other man, with the nature of being his wife. So from here we learn Bulas Baal, that only through this can B'nei Neach, can the nations of the world come to the marriage. And the same was it in regards to Jews before Matan Torah, before the giving of the Torah. If this is what constitutes marriage, so what constitutes divorce then? By the children of Noah. Once he sends her away and she leaves. Or she goes away on her own and she leaves him. She'ein lahem gerushin b'ksav. They have no gerushin, they have no divorce through writing, through a document. And also, gerushin, divorce is not dependent on him alone. It's dependent either on him or her. When one of them decides that they've had enough, they want to leave, either he or her, and they leave, then the marriage is dissolved. And no longer are they married. We see from here several pertinent points. First of all, what constituted marriage before the giving of the Torah, and what constitutes marriage now for the nations of the world, is only consummation. Secondly, we must have the will of both. Thirdly, we do not need any witnesses. Fourthly, what dissolves the wedding, dissolves the marriage, is when they, either he or her, decides to separate. And they do separate. Any type of ceremony will not help. Any type of court act or law of the government or law of some type of religion, religious ceremony, civil ceremony, will not help to create legally a marriage and will not help legally to break the marriage. This is in regards to the marriage, in regards to the halacha of the Eishes Chaverei, that a Jew, that a non-Jew was commanded, prohibited, to take the wife of a fellow non-Jew. This is what constituted marriage before the giving of the Torah and by the Menei Neach afterwards. Now the Rambam brings, also at the beginning of Yishus, Kibun Shinitnu Torah. Once the Torah was given, Nitztavu Yisrael, Yisrael were commanded, Shim Yitzo Ish Liso Isho, that if a man wants to marry a woman, and the woman is willing, Yikna Osot Chila, first he must make a kinyan. He must make some act of possession. Bifnei Edim. And this must take place in the presence of two witnesses. Witnesses which are qualified witnesses for all laws of the Torah. That means that they must be upright Jewish men and not related to each other or to the chosen or the kala. Bi'ahakach tiyeh li l'isha. And then only afterwards does she become his wife. Shneimar, as it states, Ki yikach ish isha uvoi leho. We have two psukim in the Torah. One is in Devarim Chof Beis, Pasuk Yud Gimel, and the other is in Devarim Chof Dalet Aleph. Where it states, Ki yikach ish isha uvoi leho, or Ki yikach ish isha uvoi leho. That if a man takes a wife and he has a physical relations with her, so the Gemara learns that first he must take her, and only afterwards is he permitted in the physical relationship. So first there must be this taking, which the Gemara learns is an act of a kinyan, an act of a possession. The Rambam continues, Velikuchin Elu, Mitzvah Sesheshal Terehim. This act of possession, this is a positive commandment in the Torah. Which means if a person wants to live with a woman as man and wife, first he must make this act. Ube'echon Mishleshet Dvorim Ha'isha Niknes. And this act can be done in one of three ways. We'll mention just one because it is common, more than common, it's almost 100% that this is the way we make our chasnas, and that's with kesef, that he must give something of value to the woman. And this is what is known in the Gemara as kiddushin or erusin. Bechol moki. And once a woman has accepted this to become the wife of her prospective husband, then she is known as a Mikudeshes Umu'uresis. Given she nikneis a isha v'nasis Mikudeshes, once she is acquired through this way, even though no physical relationships have taken place, or even though she has not yet gone to live in her husband's house, but she is a married woman in the full legal sense of the Torah, And if another man will have a sexual relationship with her, then he is guilty of the capital punishment by the Bezdin. And if the husband wants to divorce his wife, sriha get. Then we have to have a get. There must be a divorce in accordance to the divorce of the Torah. That's in regards to marriage. In regards to divorce, the beginning of Hilchus Gerushin, Rambam brings in a Isha Misgareshes and a Biksav. A Jewish woman can be divorced only through a document, Shiagia law, which will come into her hand. Biksav zehu anikra get. And this document is what is known as a get. Ba'asore devorim hein ikra agereshin min haTorah. And besides all of the provisions that the rabbinical courts have made for a divorce, the Torah has required 10 points in this document of divorce. And then the Rambam enumerates them, which is not necessary for us to go into. But we see that divorce means a document which must reach her, which must be written in strict accordance to what the Torah has required, and on that there are 10 basic points. So we see from here now that Achar Matan Torah, after the giving of the Torah, the Torah gave to Klal Yisrael a Kedusha Yisera, another dimension in Kedusha and sanctity in regards to their structure of marriage. That is, that the marriage is constituted, the marriage is made only through a Maisa Kicho, only if there is this act of Kiddushin Bifnei Edim, before two qualified witnesses, before any physical relationship. And from the other aspect, physical relationship, consummation has no effect here either way. It will not make the marriage, and it will not keep the marriage from becoming valid. And the marriage can be broken only through a proper document, a get. So what was given to the Bnei Noach, to the people of the world, which in many lands and in many types of civil law, not in South Africa I'm told, but in many types of civil law, which is still referred to as common law marriage, that means that if a man takes a wife and they decide they want to become man and wife and they live together and they consummate the marriage, then it's a legal marriage. And once they separate, so then the marriage is broken. And this the Torah recognizes as the structure of marriage for all peoples of the world, and it recognizes no other structure. But for the Bnei Yisrael, there's one exception to that, and that's to the Bnei Yisrael. And this was an exception only after the giving of the Torah. Before the giving of the Torah, the sons of Israel were in the same classification. After the giving of the Torah, Kodesh Baruch Hu told Klal Yisrael that every marriage which started with Adam v'Chava, the first man and the first woman, that the Medrash tells us that the Almighty himself was the Shushvin, he was the best man. He himself prepared Chava for the chuppah. He prepared her, the Medrash says, and he made up her hair, and he made her beautiful, and he brought her to Adam. And this was the universal marriage from that time. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Klal Yisrael that for your marriages, there must be a greater dimension, a stronger structure a higher level and degree of sanctity. Marriage is not made merely by living together, and marriages are not broken merely by leaving each other. But there's a whole process. There must be a maisa kicho, first a proper act of kinyan of possession. This must be made before the two qualified witnesses, otherwise it's invalid, it's meaningless. And then, are they man and wife? Whether there was a consummation or not. And then he's permitted to have physical relations with her. This was the mitzvah's essay, the positive commandment. And to dissolve such a marriage, since it's a much stronger and firmer structure, and a higher level of structure, it cannot be merely dissolved just by the two parties leaving each other. But there must be a document of divorce which is written in great detail with 10 major points from the Torah and countless from the Rabbonim, from the rabbis, given to her. All other ceremonies, they're meaningless in the eyes of the Torah when it comes to Bnei Yisrael. Common law marriage doesn't exist by Bnei Yisrael. Court ceremonies, documents, civil laws and so forth. This does not create issues marriage. If the marriage was fulfilled properly, then she's an Ashesi, she's another man's wife, with all of the severity of the law which surrounds that. If not, then she is not another man's wife. Now we find even a further dimension. The Rambam in Perek Yud of Ishus writes, Harusa Asura Labaila Midivrei Seifrim calls Man Shiva Besaviho. What we mentioned till now makes the woman into a status which is known as arusa, erusin. You might translate that in English as betrothal, but it's not. I don't know if that's an exact translation. It's certainly not an engagement because she's completely married in accordance to all of the ramifications of the law. But even so, Arusa Asura Labaila Midivrei Seifim calls Man Shiva Besaviha. As long as she's still living in her father's house, she has not moved into her husband's home yet, then she is not permitted, and he is not permitted, to have any physical relationships as of yet. Midivrei Seifim, this is a rabbinical decree, even though she is his wife. It was customary in the time of the Chumash in the Tanakh and in the time of the Talmud that the first stage of marriage, this erusin, would take place in her home, and then only at a later time would she move into her husband's home. So before then, they were not permitted in any physical relationships. And there was even a corporal punishment given by the Beis Din on someone that would not fulfill this edict. When is he permitted to her? Not until he brings her into his house, and he is alone with her in a permanent nature, and he sets her aside for he himself. And this is what is known as bringing her to the chuppah. And this is what is also referred to as nisuin, the second stage of the marriage. Our custom, this was a custom that has become prevalent for the last 1,000 or 1,500 years, is to take both of these stages of marriage and fulfill them at one time. And that's why under the chuppah we give the ring and we say Hareyat Mikudeshes Li, and that's the erisin, that's what would be known as the betrothal. And then, and we have one cup of wine and we make a brocha, and then we take a second cup of wine and we make other brochas, and that's called the chuppah. So we do it all at once today. But in the times when it was done in two stages, so even after the kiddushin, the sages came and said that there must be a further dimension of kiddushin, of sanctity in the marriage, and that is that they are not permitted to each other as long as she's still living in her father's house and he's still living in his home. Not until he brings her to his house and he lives there alone with her on a permanent nature, and he sets her aside for himself. And this is what is called chuppah. Even, and this is what the Chazal tell us. Kala b'lei brocho, asura lei kenido. This chuppah gives an extra dimension of brocha and sanctity to the bride. And a kala b'lei brocho, a kala that does not have this brocha, so the Chazal said that asura lei kenido, she is also to you, she's forbidden to you as a woman who's a nida, a woman who's in a state of menstruation. And when we make the brocha at the time of the kiddushin, we make the brocha asher osar lonu es ha'arusais v'hiter lonu es ha'nesuis lonu, that you have forbade us to have relationships with an arusa, with a woman that we have only this first stage of kiddushin with, but you have permitted us to the nesuis lonu, to those that we have had a complete stage of kiddushin and chuppah. Kiven shenichnasa arusa lechuppah, once she has come into the chuppah, that means into the chosen's house or into the type of chuppah that we make. Incidentally, that's the reason why after the chuppah we set aside a room for the chosen and kala, where they're there alone and they eat something that represents his home, bringing her into his home. Then he is allowed to have physical relationships with her whenever he so desires, as long as she's not in a state of menstruation. And she is now his complete wife in regards to all laws of the Torah. And once she goes into the chuppah, then she is called a nesua. She is known as a nesua, and this is the full state of marriage, even though it was not consummated. Consummation does not play a role in marriages by Bnei Yisrael. And before the chuppah, we were commanded by our sages that we have to make brochas, because since this is finalizing the structure of marriage, and this is giving a further dimension of sanctity to it, therefore we were commanded that we must make brochas. So we must make six brochas. Then the Rambam tells us what these six brochas are, which we're all quite familiar with. We hear them at the chasna. Im yashom yain, and if there is wine present, may vi keishel yain umavorach al yain tchilum asades kulun ala keish. Then you take a cup of wine and you make a brocha on the wine, and then you make the other brochas. And then there are seven brochas. These are the seven brochas of the nesuin. V'yesh mekemes, there were some places, this I believe is a svarisha custom, shenoag olohovi yahadas yemayayin. They would bring hadas, they would bring something, a plant that would have a sweet aroma to it. And they would make a mere priagofen, and then they would make a brocha on this hadas, and they would smell it. And then they would make the six brochas. And we must have 10 people who are over the bar mitzvah, a minion, for these brochas. So this now is an additional dimension. And this is the dimension which is known as chuppah. The Gemara in Masechta Kiddushin and Av Beis Omad Beis, the Gemara asks the question, there's a Mishnah that states for Ish Mekadish, a man that marries a woman. An expression used is Mekadish, Kiddushin, which is the expression we commonly use for marriage, at least the first stage of it. The Torah does not use this expression. The Torah uses the expression Ki Ikach, to take. So the Gemara wants to know why does the Mishnah use the expression Ish Mekadesh instead of Ki Ikach? So the Gemara says, Toni Lishne Daraisu Lebesev Toni Lishne Darabonan. The expression of the Torah, the Mishnah uses in one place. Then it wants to use the expression of Darabonan. Darabonan always refer to marriage as Mekadesh, as Kiddushin. Umay Lishne Darabonan. What does this mean? The Osa Loa Kuli Alma Ki Hegdish. That a marriage is similar to Hegdish. Hegdish refers to Beis Hamikdash, the temple. When you gave something to the temple, so no one else was allowed to have any benefit from it or to use it in any way. Because once you gave it to the temple, to the Beis Hamikdash, then it became Kodesh. It became sanctified. And since the same thing refers here to marriage, that once you marry a woman, no one else can benefit from her. No one else can take her as long as she is married to you. So therefore, the Rabbonon, the rabbis, always refer to Kiddushin, to marriage, as Kiddushin. The Osalo Akuli Alma, where she is forbidden to everyone else. Now, if you own something, nobody else can use it without your permission. This is not that dimension that we're referring to. If you own something, no one else can use it without your permission. But a wife, even if you give permission, no one else can use her. If I own something legally, I can give permission to someone else to use it. But if the Beis Hamikdash owns something, still other people cannot use it. What's the difference? Because when you own something, then you merely have a legal ownership in it. But when the Beis Hamikdash owned something, not only was there a legal ownership, but there was a degree of kedusha, of sanctity. And through this degree of sanctity, it now rose above the reach of all other people. This is the same as with kedushin. When you marry a woman, it's not to be considered as some type of legal possession, but rather there was a dimension of sanctity, of kedusha, that took effect in the marriage. Because of this, now she rises above the reach of all other people. She is mekudeshes to him, she is sanctified to him, and to him alone. And that degree of sanctity that is there, that precludes all other people. This is what the Chachomim were teaching us when they called marriage by Jews kiddush. If I own something legally, so it's mine, but I can give permission for someone else to use it. But when you made something kodesh, sanctified to the Beis HaMikdash, then nobody else was allowed to use it, even with permission, because its degree of sanctity precluded this. So is it with Kiddushin. That once you marry a woman in accordance to the law of Torah, so now there is a metzias hakedusha, there's an actual sanctity which takes effect in that marriage, and this uplifts the parties beyond all other people. And therefore, since dosalei akuli alma, since this is what takes place, so the Chachomim, the sages, call this kedusha. From all of this, we now have an idea of what the structure of marriage is in regards to Bnei Israel, that the Torah gave it, and the Kedusha and the sanctity that went with it. Now let's go further. Let's go into this further in order to get a better understanding. The act of marital relationships between a man and a woman, a husband and a wife, in many places in the Torah, in the Tanakh, and in the Gemara, this is phrased as achilas lechem, the eating of bread. We will cite two of these places. The Torah tells us in Parshas Vayeshev, Yosef. And Yosef became a servant by Potiphar, and he became very successful. Vayazev called, this is in Parshas Vayeshev, Lamates Vov. Vayazev kol asherlo biyad Yosef. And Potiphar left everything into the hands of Yosef. Velayoda itay ma'uma. And he didn't know anything that was going on in his own house, or amongst his own possessions, ki im halecha ma'asher hu ochel, with the exception of the bread which he eats. So the Chazal say, what does this mean? The Rashi brings it. He ishtoi, el shadiba b'loshen nekiyah. This refers to his wife. He didn't know anything that was going on in his own house except in regards to his wife. Kima lechem asher hu echel, except the bread which he is eating. Another place where we have this is in Shmos. Shmos Aleph Posuk Yutes by Mesha. When Moshe ran away from Egypt and he came to Midian and he came to a well, and there were the daughters of Yisro, 7 of them, and the shepherds tried to chase them away, and Moshe came and he saved them by Yeshion. And they thanked him and they went home. When they came home, so Yisro asked them, Madua mihatin behayim, why have you come home so quickly today? Vatomarenu ish mitzri hitzelonu miyararoi. So they said, because an Egyptian man came and he saved us from the shepherds. It was normal that they would have these problems with the shepherds. And also he has drawn all of the water and he gave water to our sheep. So Yisro said to his daughters, and where is he? Lomaze azaften es ish. Why did you leave him there? Kiren lei v'yechalochem. Bring him here. Call him to come here. V'yechalochem, and he shall eat bread. So the simple meaning is achnosis orchim. Bring him here, and we'll give him. So we see that the marital relationship is referred to in the Torah, and this is in many places in the Tanakh and in the Gemara, as achilas lechem, the eating of bread. What does this mean? This has a very deep concept. And before understanding this, we have to give some background. We have a principle from the sages. And the Rambam brings this in Shmei Neperokim. The act of a person is always related to the one who exercises the act. The pu'ula is mishachesis el apel. The actions of an individual is always and consistently related to the individual who is exercising that act. Even though we might have two acts that outwardly seem the same acts, but not so. They are related specifically to the one who is exercising such acts. And therefore, even though they might be the same act, but since they are exercised by two different people, then they are different acts. The Rambam writes this in regards to an ideology by certain philosophers that they held that an act of man, if we find the same type of act by behemoth, by animal, then it's the same act. Except in this case a man is doing it, and in another case an animal is doing it. In this case it's affected by a man, in another case it's affected by an animal. And the Rambam brings from Chazal, and there are many sources on this, that this is a great falsehood. Even though they might appear to be the same acts, but they are totally different. Why is this? Because
the act is affected totally by the one who's committing it. He places into this act his energies, his abilities, his talents, his thoughts, his spirit. An act must always be united with the one who's exercising this act. And therefore, if, for example, an animal would do such an act, then there'll be the energies and the talents and the abilities of the animal in that act. If a man will do an act, there'll be the talents and the energies and the abilities and the spirit of man in that act. And therefore, you cannot compare one act to another, even though superficially it might seem as the same act. It's a very, very important principle with very far-reaching ramifications. To go a little deeper into it, an animal has a goof. He has a physical makeup. He was given a degree of nefesh, a certain minute degree of what would be referred to as a nefesh, as a life. The Torah states also when the Almighty created animals, He created a nefesh, a life. But certainly that life is of a much lesser scope than the nefesh, than the life of man. And this is the animal. So any powers that the animal can interject into his act is only physical and of a small degree of nefesh, of life into it. Man was given a physical structure. He was given a nefesh. He was given a tremendous, overpowering spark of life. He was given emotions which is involved in this nefesh. He was given a lev, a heart, which is involved in this nefesh. He was given chokhma v'seichel. He was given wisdom. An intellect, and he was even given the Shoma. He was given a soul. And all of these powers are possible to interject into his act, whatever act it might be. Therefore, we cannot compare acts between different species of the world, and even in the same species. We cannot compare acts between different people. Even though superficially they might seem as the same act, it's only superficially. But the heart of that act, what's inside of that act, that can be completely different one from the other. Therefore, the Rambam says, if an animal eats, and a man eats, not like philosophers held, it's the same act. He says this is nonsense. Even though an animal eats food and a man eats food, superficially it seems to be the same act. Food is being consumed, except here it's being consumed by an animal, here by a man. It's two worlds. It's not that this is an achila, this is an achila, this is eating and that's eating, except one man is doing and one animal is doing. But since this is the eating of an animal, this is one level of eating. This is the eating of man, This is a different act altogether. This is an achila, this is an eating that has physical energies in it, and that's it. The other is an eating which can have physical energies, which can have emotionally energies interjected in it, which can have wisdom interjected in it, and spirit interjected in it. Therefore, they are not to be compared to each other. Actually, we have a halacha, a law which relates to this in the Gemara. The Gemara says, that on Shabbos, or also in regards to other isuri, domer sheinu miskaver is buter. If a man does something without full intention, then it's not considered an act which he's responsible for on Shabbos. For example, if he wants to move some furniture across the lawn, and there's a possibility by moving it, he might plow up the land, even though it might be a good plowing, and after Shabbos he can plant there, but that's not considered the act of plowing. That's a davar sheinu miskaven. That's something which he does not have intent for. And after Shabbos he can plant there, but that's not considered the act of plowing. That's a davar sheinu miskaven. That's something which he does not have intent for. And we find this in other isurim, in other areas of the Torah. For example, an ozir, the Nazirite, is not allowed to remove any of his hair. So the Mishnah says he's allowed to wash his hair, he's allowed to shampoo his hair, even though during the process some hair might become removed. Nevertheless, he's allowed to, because this is a dover sheinu miskaven. He does not have intent for it. Now, why is a dover sheinu miskaven something that you do not have intent for? Why is that considered allowed? He knows it might happen, and still he's allowed to do it, as long as it will not certainly happen. But if it will not certainly happen, even though there's a great possibility or even a probability that it will, he's allowed to do it. Why? So the explanation given is because that's not considered the pool of Odom, that's not considered the act of man. When man does something, he doesn't merely do it physically. He does it physically, he does it emotionally, he does it mentally. Over here is an act that's not being done mentally, and therefore this is not considered the act of man. And the Torah in these cases was interested in the act of man, and therefore it is considered kime'elot domi. It's as if it happened by itself. It is not the act of man. Now, another principle which is very important, and that is there are certain acts which relate to the seichel of man, to the intellectual capacity of man. For example, the study of wisdom. Or for example, the sages tell us the yearn for honor. This is an intellectual. This is an intellectual desire. There are certain acts that relate basically to the nefesh of man, to the emotions of man. For example, anger, jealousy, joy. Relates to the emotions, to the heart of man. There are certain acts which relate basically to the physical structure of man. An example, eating, achila. In other words, of all of the acts that man can fulfill, they don't all relate to he himself in the same manner. Some have a stronger relationship to the intellectual man, some to the emotional man, some to the physical man. Whatever act that we find relates basically to intellectual man, then this we will not find by other species. Because this seichel, this intellect, was not given to other species. Therefore you won't find animals opening books to study, or going to university to study, or studying Torah, or you do not even find them yearning for COVID for great honors, generally. If it's an act which relates to the nefesh ha'odom, we are dividing man into three categories here. The nefesh ha'odom, which means the essence of life that's in him, the emotions of man. Those acts you also will not find by animals except to a small degree. Because a minute degree of a nefesh, animals are given. That's why you will find anger by animals. Sometimes you'll find jealousy by animals. But it'll only be to a small degree. And some you won't even find at all. For example, the simcha, the joy that you find by man, that most likely you won't find by animals. When it comes to an act which relates basically to the physical man, those acts you will find by animals also. Because animal was made basically physical. Therefore, achila, eating, that you'll find by animals, almost in the same state. Sleeping, which is a physical act, that you'll find by animals. To warm the body, or to cool the body, to go into the sun when it's cold, and to go into the shade when it's hot, that you'll find by animals. So this is another important principle. So the first principle is every act, even though they might seem to be the same, they are all in relationship to the actor, to the one who is exercising that act. Because it is made up of all of his abilities and energies. Well, at least some of his abilities and energies. The second principle is, not all acts relate to the human being in the same manner. Some are basically entrenched in the seichel, in the intellect of man. Some in the nefesh, in the lave, the heart, in the emotions of man. And some in the goof, in physical man. And those acts which are entrenched in intellectual man, you will certainly not find them by the species. Those that you find entrenched in the emotions, basically, to a degree you'll find them by other species. Those that are entrenched physically, you will find by other species. This is a second important principle. Now, in regards to the act of eating, that's an act that we said is basically entrenched in the body of man, and therefore you find this act also by the animal. It does not have to be the same act at all. Because when the animal eats, he can only project his physical powers into that act of eating. When man eats, he can project his physical powers, his emotional powers, and his mental powers into the act of eating. The Chazal tell us, the Rambam brings in Hilchos Deos, that when a man eats, he can fulfill the same mitzvahs Hashem with that eating as when he does other mitzvahs. If he will project in that eating his emotions, and his mental powers, and even his spiritual powers, then that eating, the Gemara says, is nefesh avolov ki korban, that becomes like a sacrifice. We are not only referring to eating which is actually mitzvah, for example, the eating of the sacrifices in the Beis Hamikdash, or the eating on Shabbos and Yom Tov, or the making kiddush on wine. But we are even referring to an achilas reshus, Rambam says. Even the eating which is optional. If he eats merely to satisfy his taste, the Rambam writes, he eats only what's mosuch lechechi, kibehema. He eats only what's sweet to the palate, like an animal. An animal will eat only what tastes good. If it doesn't taste good, he won't eat it. If he eats only to fulfill his physical desires, then that eating is nechshav ka'achilas behema. The Chazal say that eating is the same as an animal. And why? Because of what we said. Because an animal eats and a man eats. An animal eats with his keches haguf, with all of the powers of his physique. If a man eats only with his physical powers, then it's achilas behema. It's the same as the eating of an animal. But if he eats in order to preserve his strength, in order to make himself healthy, he does not eat only what is sweet to the palate. He eats even things that do not taste good because it will make him strong. He does not eat merely to satisfy his lust and desire. But he conquers his yetzer. He conquers his desires and he rules his desires. With what is he ruling his desires? With his body. He's ruling his desires with his mind. He eats to make himself strong in order to serve the Almighty. In order to be mesameach es hanefesh, to bring rejoicing to himself so he can serve the Almighty with a good heart and be a strong Eved Hashem, then that eating has nothing in similarity whatsoever with the eating of an animal. This is achilas behema. That's the eating of an animal. This is achilas odom. This is the eating of a man. It's two worlds. This is an eating which encompasses only physical powers. This is an eating which encompasses physical and emotional and mental and spiritual powers. That achila, that act, is a different act altogether. And it becomes great mitzvahs. This is what the Rambam writes in Hilchos Deos, and the Chazal tell us. It's for this reason that the Chazal tell us that they ordained that before a Jew eats, before he eats a suda, before he eats bread, he must wash nitil shadayim. He must wash his hands. And with a brocha. And the Gemara learns this out from a posuk v'yiskadish dashtem, that you shall sanctify yourself. Why? Because since the act of eating is entrenched strongly in physical man, and if he will not guide it and direct it, it will be a physical act alone. And that's something which is not fit for man at all. So in order to uplift it and give it this kedusha, this sanctity, So it will be the achila, the act, the eating of a man, not the eating of an animal. So Chazal enacted Netilas Yadayim, that before eating bread you must wash your hands with a brocha, and this we learn from the pasuk Vizkadashtem, to sanctify yourself, in order to sanctify the achila, to sanctify the eating. And the Gemara says, Shulchan Shel Odom, a person's table, his nechshav lekim, his mizbeach, can rise to the heights of the altar. His food can rise to the heights of sacrifices. But on the other hand, his table also, and his food also, can sink to the lowliness of that of an animal. It is for this reason that the Maisa Habia, the act of marital relationships, are referred to in the Torah by the phrase of Achilas Lechem, the eating of bread. Because this also is an act which is basically entrenched in the physical structure of man. Basically, this act does not relate to the emotions, does not relate to the wisdom, but relates to the physical man. And therefore, it is very similar to Achilas Lechem, to the act of eating. And this is why we find the same act by the species of animals and by the species of wildlife, because they also were given a physical makeup and a physical structure, and therefore physical acts they also have. But just as the achilas lechem, the eating of bread by man, must not relate to the eating of bread by animals, so must the marital act also must not at all relate that of man to that of animals. And therefore, the man was commanded that this act, even though it's entrenched in physical man, but it must be sanctified. Now, what does it mean that it must be sanctified? And this is a very, very broad subject with a very broad scope. Let's just mention a few points here. When an animal fulfills this act, he is doing as he was created to do. It becomes the physical act. This is proper for the animal. But by man, man was given the powers of physical, emotional, of mental, and of spiritual. And the Torah instructed him that all of these powers, all of these abilities, all of these keches must be interjected into this act. Not only must they be interjected into this act, but man can interject more powers and more abilities into this act than many, almost more than all other acts that were given to him, as we see from the Chazal, to the point where it could become from the greatest pu'ulas, from his greatest acts, and from the greatest avodis, from the greatest services to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Torah tells us that when Adam, the first man, came to his wife, it states in Perek Dalet, Posuk Aleph Bereishis, Vo Adam Yoda es Chava Ishtai, and Adam knew his wife Chava. Uses the word Yoda. Yoda, the simple Hebrew translation, means he knew. But actually, Yoda has another meaning. It is the deepest and greatest dimension of the intellect of man. That the mind of man, the brain of man, is divided into three sections. The Chochmah, the wisdom, the Bino, a second dimension of wisdom, and Das, which is the greatest dimension of wisdom. And in many places in the Torah, where a man came to his wife, it states the Yoda. It is coined by the word Yoda. Where here the Torah is revealing to us that the source of this act by man does not necessarily come from the physical level of man, but the source of this act can come from the Madreges Hadas, from the greatest dimension of the intellect of man, which borders on the Neshoma, on the soul of man. Through this, sages say, HaMekadosh Atzmai, if he sanctifies this act, he comes to the greatest levels of serving the Almighty. This sanctification, this Kedusha, then encompasses both he and his wife. It encompasses he and his wife to such a level where the sages tell us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself joins them. Shechina Shruya Beneihem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu dwells with them during the time of this act, if it's at the level of the Das where it comes, it reaches to the greatest dimensions of man. Not only does he join them and does he dwell in them, but he places his name in them. As it states, Chazal tell us that the Yud of his name he placed in Ish, and the Hay of his name he placed in Isha. And when this act is fulfilled in perfection and sanctity, then there is a total oneness. The Yud and the Hay come together, where there is a total oneness between man and woman and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If the act is not filled in perfection, then Shechina Mesalek, he removes himself and he removes the Yud and the Hay and is left two fires. If you take the Yud from the name of the man and you take the Hay from the name of the woman, you are left with Esh and Esh, two fires. This is the level that it can reach. Further, through this act in perfection, they come to the mitzvah of Pruavu, to multiply, which the Gemara refers to this act, this mitzvah, not as a mitzvah, but as a mitzvah rabbah. One of the rare places in the Torah which is referred to as mitzvah rabbah, an extraordinary mitzvah. And for such a mitzvah, to give forth children, this is one of the rare places that a person has a right to even sell a Sefer Torah. If he owns a Sefer Torah, he's not allowed to sell it. Under no circumstances. Except very extraordinary situations. One situation is to get married in order to have children. A further level that comes, he becomes a shutif im HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Becomes a partner with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because the Braisa tells us in Masechet Neda, Gimel Shutfim Ba'odam, there are three partners in producing a child: the man, the woman, and the Almighty. And when this is fulfilled in perfection, then all three are equal partners. This Kiddusha that comes from this act, when it's sanctified with all of the keches, all of the power of man and woman, the sages tell us this Kiddusha goes into the children. And therefore many great children are produced from such an act. If, heaven forbid, the act does not reach this level, it lacks, and the shortcomings also go into the children. And if you have a generation that's full of promiscuity, the Gemara tells us you can expect further generations of that type, the product of such promiscuity. The Gemara tells us in Masechet Nedarim, the Maral speaks of this Gemara in the Mishnah and Masechet Oves. In Perek Hei, Mishnah Gimel, Asora Deris Mineach Ve'ad Avraham. There were 10 generations from Neach to Avraham, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu was angry the whole time until Avraham came into the world. What was the greatness of Abraham? So the Gemara says in Nedarim Lamed Beis Omed Beis, Shehimli Chesei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Aramach Evorim. Abraham was the first one. We find that from Odom till Neach were 10 generations, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu had no nachas. From Neach to Abraham was another 10 generations, and still HaKadosh Baruch Hu had no nachas until Abraham came into the world. What was so unique about Avraham? So the Gemara tells us Avraham was the first one who ruled over all of his Ramach, all of his 248 Evorim, 248 parts of the body. And the numerical value of Avraham is 248. For this reason, because Abraham became a king over every facet of his body, and he was the first one. And this is why he became the pillar to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Maral says, this is why we find that the mitzvah of Bris Milo was given first in the world to Abraham Avinu. Because the mitzvah of Bris Milo was the sanctification of man in his totality. The mitzvah Bris Milo taught the world and taught Klal Yisrael that there is no part whatsoever of the human body that is not sanctified to the Almighty and cannot serve the Almighty. Except the 20 generations from the creation of the world till Abraham could not reach that level. they were impossible. They found it impossible to sanctify the entire body. And therefore Bris Mila was never given. But when the giant of Avraham rose and he became such a king, and a king over himself, and a king over every facet of the human being, and he was able to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the greatest levels of sanctity and Kedusha in every facet, so he brought this perfection into the world. And therefore the numerical value of his name is Resh Mem Ches, 248, which encompasses every organ of the body. And therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I will now give you my covenant, my sanctification, which takes place on that particular organ of the body, because Avraham was capable of sanctifying it. And this showed the world that at Avraham's level there are no shortcomings in the body. There are no imperfections in the body. There is nothing which is a herpa, a shame in the body. The Rambam writes in Shmei Neprokim, he says that what the Reifim, with the doctors and the Chaykrim and the scientists say, that this act is merely a physical and biological act, he says, herpa hilonu. This is a disgrace and shame to the human species. Herpo hilonu. This is a disgrace to the human species, to us as human beings. To equate that act as a purely biological act. Because that's what it is by the behemoth. And the nations of the world might come to such a conclusion because they never reached the level of Avraham Avinu. But when Avraham saw there is sanctity in that act, even at greater levels than other mitzvahs in the Torah, and that it cannot be equated biologically as a simple biological act that you find by other species in the world, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Avraham Bris Sholem, the Bris Mila. And this is what Avraham bequeathed to the Bnei Yisrael that also were capable of fulfilling this level, this dimension. And this is what the Rambam meant, that according to what they say, Cherpo Hilono, then this is a shame to us. But according to Avraham Avinu, this is a kedusha, this is a sanctity to us. It's for this reason that we find that the Torah consistently praised the Noshim HaTzidkoniyos, the righteous women who wanted to cleave to their husbands, especially those who had great husbands, to fulfill this sanctified act, and even further to bring forth sanctified children from this. We find this in this week's parsha, in Parshas Vayetze, Lamed Tezayin, when Rochel and Leah were vying for their husband Yaakov, and Leah went and she persuaded Rochel to give up her night being with Yaakov to herself. So it states, Vayova Yaakov min asoda bo erev, Yaakov came from the field that night, Bateitse Leah likrosa, and Leah went out to meet him. tonight you will come to me. I made a deal with Rachel that even though it's her night tonight, but tonight you shall come to me. Now one would think that this lacks in modesty, which many times it does. But the Chazal tell us that because she wanted to be with such a sanctified person as Yaakov Avinu, and she wanted sanctified children from him, so the Chazal tell us that b'schus of this, she was given the son Yisachar. Yisachar was born. Who was Yisachar? From all of the 12 sons that were born to Yaakov, the greatest son in Torah was Yisachar. 200 heads of Sanhedrins came out from Yisachar. Yedei Bino, when it came to declare the calendar and the Reish Chodesh and the leap year, and none of Klal Yisrael had the wisdom to do it, they would come to Yisachar, Yedei Bino. B'schus that she wanted to be with this great man Yaakov, Yotze Himeno Yisachar, came from her Himeno Yisachar, who was Balei Torah, who was the greatest in Torah. We find this by Sora, that in Lech Lecho Tez Zayin Gimel, Vatikach Sorai Eishes Avrom Es Hogar Amitzri Shivchoso. The Sora, the wife of Abraham, took Hogar Amitzrish, took Hogar, her Shivcho, her maidservant, after she was with Abraham for 10 years and she had no children, and she gave her to Abraham. Vatikach, she took her and gave her to Abraham for a wife. So the Chazal say, what does it mean, Vatikach, she took? That means to take, that means to lift up, to carry. Another person you don't lift up, you don't carry. So she said, the Chazal tell us, Vatikach lo bidvorim, that she took her with words. What did she tell her? Vakach tel bidvorim, ashreich shezochis lihidoveg bekuk kodesh kezeh. How fortunate you are to cleave, to come close to such a sanctified person as Abraham. We find this in Egypt, that when the Noshim, when the women of Egypt, the Jewish women of Egypt, when they came to their husbands, and their husbands were exhausted and fatigued from the slave labor, and they aroused their husbands in order that they should have marital relations with them. So the Gemara tells us that from there came out a daughter generation which was never equaled, unparalleled. And when Moshe Rabbeinu said that he needed copper for the Mishkan, they brought the Mares Hatzeves, they brought their copper mirrors, and Moshe rejected them. He said they're made for vanity. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Kabel Shehein Chavivin Olai Mikulam, take them because these are more precious to me than all of the other contributions of the gold and the silver. Because it was through these mirrors that they aroused their husbands, and they created a generation which was unparalleled in its strength and its kedusha and its sanctity. And then to the contrary, we also find in this week's Sedra that a great tragedy came out from this episode of Rachel and Leah, that the Chazal tell us in Masechet Nida and Lamed Aleph, לפי של זלזלו במשקל הצדיק לזוכס ולהיקובר אימא, that because Rachel gave away this night and it was not that precious in her eyes to be that night with Yaakov that she was willing to give it away. She did not merit to be buried together with him in Moris Machpelah, in the cave of Machpelah. Rochel was the only one of the Imos that is not buried there. And what does that mean? That means because she relinquished that night, this created a disruption in the perfection of unity that comes between man and wife when they reach such a level. And because there was disruption in unity, therefore it had its effect where they were not buried together, but they were buried separately. This was the far-reaching ramification. And this is what the Torah means. This point, that what we're speaking about, is what the Torah tells us. In Parsha Shemos, that when Parai decreed that all of the male children that are born, the midwives should put to death, and they refused to do it. And the midwives told Parai that not like the Egyptian women are the Hebrew women. The Jewish women, they're like choyes, they're like the beasts of the field. By the beasts of the field, they give birth very quickly. And the same thing with the Jewish women. They give birth so quickly that before you, the midwife comes, they're already born. What was meant by this? They told Parai, and this was Shifra Vapur, this was Yocheved and Miriam. They told Parai, the Egyptian women, they're like behemoths. They're like the domesticated animal. The domesticated animal gives birth very slowly, with great difficulty. And the shepherd has to help him. The farmer has to help him. The Jewish women, the Hebrew women, they're kichoyes, you know. They're like the chayes hasodah, the beast of the field. The beasts of the field need no help when they give birth. They give birth very quickly and very easily. And therefore, before the midwife comes, they're already born. Now what was meant by this? Mitzrayim, Egypt, was symbolized as the chamor, as the donkey. Besorim tsar chamorim. The donkey. Physical body. This is slow moving and sluggish. Lightness and speed. That comes from beyond the physical body, that comes from the nefesh. The proof is because when the life leaves the body, then the body lies silent and doesn't move. Now this act that we're speaking about, we said it's entrenched in physical man, and therefore you find it by the animals also. But there's a difference. Can't equate it, because by animals it's entirely physical, while by man it's physical and emotional and it's mental and it's spiritual. By Egypt, that they were kechamorim, they had sunk into the depths of the physical abyss, like the most physical of all animals, and so were their acts physical as all animals. The greatest incest and promiscuity, the Torah tells us, was in Egypt. So therefore they said, your women, they give birth like animals. very slowly, very painfully. But the Noshima Ivriyos, the Hebrew women, they're sanctified from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They're not merely on a physical plane. And therefore, if they're to be compared to any other species, they're kechoyesena. They're like the wild beast of the animal, which are light-footed and are full of speed, have left less physical properties and cumbrousness to them. And they don't need midwives. They give birth immediately. And from here, we understand what the Chazal tell us. The Chazal say, Isha kisiste, that if a woman is unfaithful to her husband and she commits adultery with another man, so the Torah calls her a seita. The Chazal asked, what does this word seita mean? It comes from the word sheita. Sheita means a person who has no das, who has no understanding. Ein ho isha men ha'efes achin nichnaso lo ruach shtus. What drives a person to adultery, to promiscuity, when the seichel, when the mind leaves her, or leaves him? Eina manaofi, which refers both to her and him. The Maral explains, as we said, because as long as he has all of his properties, he has his mind and his heart and his spirit, then that act is with the greatest of kedusha, the greatest of sanctity. But when that leaves, that mind and spirit, and she's left only, or he's left only with physical properties, then it brings to adultery, it brings to promiscuity. And then the Gemara says further, she has to bring a sacrifice. What's her sacrifice? So orin, barley. Gemara asked, why does she bring barley? All the time a sacrifice was wheat. Wheat is the food of man. Barley is the food of animal. So the Gemara says, kiven shalosa samaisa behema. Since she acted as an animal acts, therefore she must bring a sacrifice that an animal acts, that an animal eats. What does it mean she acted as an animal? Because the acts cannot be equated unless they are exercised in the same manner. And in that case, they were exercised in the same manner. Therefore, no longer was it an act of man. It was the act of the animal. It was the act of only one small part of man, the physical part of man. And that an animal also can do. So therefore, she must bring a sacrifice of barley. Let us finalize this evening with one final statement from the Chazal, which actually summarizes this point that we have been belaboring. This is a Gemara in Masechet Seitan, Daf Dalet Amud Beis. The Maral explains this, it is the Siva Aveda Perek Desayin. It's a Gemara which seemingly has no explanation. But after all that we said this evening, it's very clear to see what the sages mean to say. Kol ha'echel lechem b'lei nitilo ki'ilu bo'al ishazena. Whoever eats bread without sanctifying his hands first with metila shadayim, with the washing of your hands, like a Jew is obligated to do, it's as if he has had sexual relations with a prostitute. This is what the Gemara tells us. So everybody asks, what's one thing have to do with the other? You eat bread without washing your hands, it's as if ki'ilu bo'al ish hazena, that you have sexual relations with a prostitute. So the Maral explains, like we're saying, because man eats bread and an animal eats bread. Man has sexual relations and an animal has sexual relations. In the eyes of the Torah, they are two worlds. Two worlds not to be equated at all. The pu'ula, the act, acts can never be compared to each other unless you take into consideration the actor also, the one who's exercising the act. Man eats. He eats with body. He eats with emotions. He eats with mind. He eats with spirit. Animal eats with body. But kola echol lechem balei netila, but someone who eats bread without sanctifying himself first, then he's not eating with mind, and he's not eating with spirit. He's eating with body. If he hasn't sanctified himself and his food first, then he's eating only because of the animal lusts that are found in man. Then the maisachila, the eating, is equated with the animal because it's both the same. It's worse than an animal. Because an animal was created to eat that way. Man was not. And therefore the Chazal say, it's ki'ilu bo'al isha zayna. It's as if he's having relationships with a prostitute. Because the sexual act also is found by man and is found by an animal. But it's two worlds. One is an act of body and heart and mind and soul and kedusha and sanctity. The other is merely a physical act. But what happens if he fulfills this act not under the structure of kedushin and chuppah and all of the sanctity? If he's first not mekadesh, he does not give kedusha to his wife. Like we went through that Bnei Yisrael were given. And he doesn't sanctify himself, his total self, and all of his body and all of his organs, like Avraham Avinu. If he does, then it's the greatest avedas and mitzvahs of Hashem. It's called v'yoda, v'yeda. It reaches the level of das, the highest level of man. But if he doesn't, so then merely it's a physical manifestation. Physical manifestations that you find by animals also. So therefore, kol ha'echel lechem b'lei netzila, whoever eats bread without sanctification of himself first, ki lebo al isha zayna. It's as if he's having relationships with a prostitute. This is the Gemara, and in here the Chazal, in their great wisdom, have summed up all that we said here now. So this explains to us what this marital act is and how it was given to the world in general, and then how much greater dimensions it was given to the Bnei Yisrael, the children of Avram, Yitzchok, and Yaakov. Next week, Im Yirtzeh Hashem, we'll continue and we'll go into the other areas that we mentioned. What the Torah has to say in particular when this act is fulfilled not within that structure of kedushin and chuppah of sanctity, but in the other areas that we mentioned.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226 Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.